This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Hello again, everybody. This is Wells Tech, episode 534, recorded on January 30th, 2018. My name is Martin Spriggs, and we're really happy that you decided to join our podcast that talks about technology and ministry. We do it each and every week, helping me do that, as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I'm excellent, Martin. Thanks for the nice intro. This is an exciting Wells Tech because once a month we focus on education technology. So you are not only joined by me, but also we are welcoming Jason Schmidt joining us from Omaha, Nebraska. Welcome, Jason.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, Martin. Hi, Sally.
You are a weary traveler probably because you just got back from, we don't have too many sympathies for you because you traveled to Florida.
Yeah. You know, I've been telling people that I was just out of town at a conference. I don't tell them where. I just don't want people to feel bad, because it's a good time of year to have something like that going on for sure.
Conferences like that, you went to FETC, Future of Education Tech, in Orlando. Conferences yep. like that are kind of a double-edged sword. You get a lot of, you get kind of the fire hose treatment of all kinds of ideas and thoughts, but you spend most of your day indoors for one, regardless right. of, where the conference is. And you usually come home with some kind of disease.
Being around so many people.
I don't know. Maybe I have a really strong immune system. My wife was the one who caught the disease while I was gone.
Is that right? That's too bad.
Pretty fired up about what you saw there at FETC. Anything you rush back to tell your coworkers about or whatever?
Oh yeah. So there's just, oh man, there's so many, it's just a great time to be alive. There are so many cool things out there right now. One of the things that I saw that I'm really excited about, and I'm hoping we can figure out a way to get some of them going around here, is it's a handheld CNC machine. So you know how you have like your X-Carve and things like that, where you put a piece of material in a box, and then it's got a rotary bit, and it'll cut pieces out of it and stuff like that. This does the same kind of thing, but it's handheld. So you grab it with two handles like this. I have a video. I'll send it out, and I can't remember the name of it. But I'll send you a link for the show notes.
Cool.
And you basically grab on the handles, and then it moves the bit for you. So you just, you kind of slide it around on your piece of plywood, and it follows and, moves the,
it's spatially aware of itself.
Yeah, exactly. That was the coolest thing I've ever seen. I don't know. I don't have any really good ways that it would fit into a curriculum necessarily, but it's really cool.
That's your task now to figure that out.
Right. I have to dig into that. But yeah, no, there are just a lot of, it's a really great mid-sized conference. If you go to ISTE, it's gigantic. You got tens of thousands of people there. This one was really spread out, and a lot of, a wide variety of topics, they had an early childhood track, which I've never seen at a conference. They actually had enough sessions to fill two or three entire days of just early childhood technology, which I thought was fantastic. An administrator track, an IT track. So the diversity of topics that were available here were a lot better than what we've seen in the past.
Where do you spend?
Or than what I've seen at other conferences. I'm a track hopper, so exactly. That should be a hashtag. I probably spent about two thirds of a day in the early childhood track, and then probably another maybe day and a half with the tech integration coaching more perspective, and I spent about half a day in the administration and IT, and then it took me an entire day just to go through the expo hall and talk to the exhibitors that I needed to talk to. So, it was a very full 4 days.
Sir, what kind of things were you seeing in the early childhood area?
A lot of experiential learning and discovery-based kinds of things, and just picking up on a lot of tips and tricks, like, you know, using a QR code that goes to a Padlet, and have the kids take a picture of whatever it was that they were working. It was super easy, you know, a 4-year-old can do it. But just not even something, I didn't even think about doing something like that up until I saw that, you know, or, things with, you know, these little B-bots. If you guys have heard of those before or seen them before, they're, you know, these little robots with buttons on top of them. They look like a bee, and you just program them to run on a track. And Ozobots were another big thing, they're relatively inexpensive, and you can use a marker with them. But you know, the thing that this lady was showing us was it's like chart tape or something like that. Oh. which you know, is just the perfect width, and apparently something that scientists use to make the charts on tagboard. And you know, you use these and it makes drawing the lines just really easy. You know, you can cut the things the length that you need to, and you know, super, you know, just super simple. I mean, you know, stuff like that, just little workflow tips and tricks were really useful. I pulled a lot of that out of it.
Interesting.
Awesome. Well, today we are going to tap into you for another angle of education technology specifically, but tying into our conversation for the month of January, where we've been talking about sharpening your skills. And we thought we would kind of up the ante a little today and talk about more formal ways to pursue professional development, things like certifications and degrees and things like that, advanced degrees, whatever. And we thought you were the perfect person to talk to about that, because educational technology is just overflowing with certifications you can pursue. I wonder, Jason, how many certifications you have under your belt.
Let's see.
Few, I bet.
Yeah, I did. I did the Smart Notebook certification about 8 or 9 years ago. That one is probably no good anymore. I did Mimio certification. That's a program they don't offer anymore. I'm a Moodle certified course creator. I've got a Google for education, the certified teacher levels 1 and 2, and then I'm also a certified trainer. And Sally, you're a certified trainer too, aren't you?
I am as well, but from many years ago, when I got that. So,
and then I'm a CETA ambassador. I have, there was something else in there too. I forget. There's just so many options for any of these things. If you're looking for something, you can probably find it. Pretty much every vendor or anybody who, Microsoft Innovative Educator. I have that one too. Yeah. You don't have to look very far to find these kinds of programs and training opportunities with.
So were they worth it? You mentioned some of these technologies really aren't current anymore, and you spent some time to get certified on them. Is it kind of a losing battle to try and stay up with the changing and the pace of technology, which is so quick? And by the time you kind of get invested in these and, you know, get some expertise, then it's on to the next thing. Is there value in doing these things?
Well, I think there's value in doing the things that you use. So, I spend probably half my life in Google. And so it makes a whole lot of sense for me to have that certification and that endorsement. I probably spend, you know, another 10 hours a week in Moodle, and I'm the regional expert in that kind of thing. So I have a lot of people coming to me with questions, and I'm constantly using that information. So, the ones that you use are the ones that are more valuable. You know, we used to use Mimio a lot, and I used to train in Mimio a lot, and now we've kind of moved on from that to different pieces of technology. So, you know, it just kind of depends on what you use, that, and those would be the ones that I would suggest that people get certified for. You know, keeping up with the changes, you know, we talk a lot about how rapidly everything is changing, but, you know, to be perfectly honest, everybody has a development cycle, and, you know, you might be looking at major changes every 6 months, maybe every year, you know, just depending on who it is. You know, if it's a smart notebook or something like that, that's every year where they're going to have a major revision. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're using these tools and you're actively involved with them, you know, you might get access to them a little bit early if you have one of these certifications, but, you know, it's not usually too difficult to keep on top of it. You just, as long as you're paying attention is the thing.
And, you know, it's not all about what you can tout as your credentials or whatever. It's more about, like you said, what you use day to day and what you need to support others on. So I'm thinking our Lutheran elementary schools, for instance, you know, typically there's one or two people that are more inclined to be comfortable with technology and support the others. And so when you go through this certification process, you're really demonstrating or exploring all the different nooks and crannies of whatever tool you're using, and so that you have a cursory knowledge at least of what the capabilities are and how you can find information to support someone if they're doing it.
Right. Yeah. And really what it kind of boils down to is you kind of become a product evangelist, you know? So, you know, I'm going to go to if I go to a conference, I'm going to talk about Google because, you know, that's what I know, but then that's also kind of, you know, that certification kind of attaches to me and, you know, people see that, oh, okay, yeah, you know, I can listen to him talk about Google because he knows what he's talking about, or Google says, you know, I'm assuming that Google knows that he knows Google products because, you know, they'll endorse him. So, you know, I think that definitely carries a lot of weight when we're working with other people, you know, and kind of, you know, it's one thing to be seen as, you know, in your building, where, you know, this is, I'm kind of, you know, you're kind of the go-to person. But to be able to have that, that additional, you know, credential, or, you know, it's not letters. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but, you know, that idea that you are recognized, that you know what you're talking about, and, you know, it kind of helps, maybe can help break down some of those barriers and make it a little bit easier to talk to people about things.
Jason, let me ask you about maybe the prerequisites for some of these courses of study. I'm sure we have people listening and people in our schools who maybe aren't super technical. You know, they wouldn't wear that badge and maybe even wouldn't want to, but might be interested in getting smarter in, you know, Google Apps or the Adobe products or, you know, OneNote or whatever it is. Is there kind of a requirement? Is there, you know, maybe at least helpful to have some kind of technical acumen before jumping into these? Or do some of these kind of just lend themselves to people just passionate about using the tools, and you really don't need to kind of understand all the underpinnings, you know, of security and networks and, you know, even how down deep how a computer works?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. There, as far as the background knowledge that's required for a lot of these things, it's not necessarily super technical. It's more comes from the mindset of being willing to try and figure stuff out.
Okay.
You know, and that's going to be anything education technology, right? You know, documentation is just not always very awesome. And, you know, even just coming up with, you know, I'm not the most creative person in the world. You know, I'd like to think that I could be, but, you know, it's something that I really have to work hard at. And, you know, coming up with ways to use some of these tools is almost maybe more important than really figuring out all the ins and outs. You know, I can tell anybody to, you know, how anything works in Google, but, you know, it took me going to a conference to say, oh yeah, you can use Google Drawing to make a comic strip. You know, I hadn't thought about that. And, you know, that's one of those things that, you know, you use it and you apply it in your classroom and you get comfortable with it. You don't need to have all the real in-depth technical knowledge, but, you know, just a familiarity with the tools is usually enough to have something like this be a good idea for you.
Sometimes it's just knowing what the tools can do. Not just, right. You know, all the buttons to press and whatever, but, you know, what are the possibilities is a big step, is to understand what the scope is and what they're good for, what they're not good for.
And I think you pointed out as you were talking about your credentials that Google now has several layers of credentialing. So I think they're kind of addressing that, get the basics, you know, mentality that sometimes people are a little more intimidated. I couldn't be a Google certified trainer or whatever, but you can take their level one exam and, you know, learn at that level.
Yeah. And I will say that of all of the certifications that are out there, Google, I think, has most of it figured out. You know, their assessment methodology is fantastic. You know, you pay for the exam, it's only $15-$20, which, you know, is skin in the game. But the way that the assessment is designed is really good. You know, it's a great model of a performance assessment that, you know, any teacher should just, you know, just take it for that experience to see what a performance assessment could look like and how you can really objectively measure whether or not somebody can do something pretty simply. With a, you know, not necessarily using that platform, but just look at the methodology behind it and how it's run is really a neat thing.
So we'll have links in the show notes to Google's Education Training Center, along with, you mentioned Seesaw, I think. Mm-hmm. Adobe has training classes you can take if you're into the Adobe products for teaching in the classroom, maybe higher level, you know, high school level or whatever. There's training with Flipgrid, BrainPop, and really a whole lot more than that. But if you want to look around at what some of the certifications are, then check out the links we have in the show notes and you know, read up on what the requirements are and what you're going to learn in the process.
Let's talk a little bit about maybe taking it one step further than just certifications and talking about degree work, advanced degrees, whether that be through a local institution or some of these online offerings. I think we all have experienced some of that. Where does that fit in with the educational technology space? What kinds of things are out there if you were looking for more of an advanced degree to, again, up your game, sharpen your skills?
Yeah, you know, if you're going for an advanced degree in education technology in particular, it's going to focus less on tools and more on pedagogy behind tools and how that technology can enable you to do really great things. So that kind of, you know, if you're talking about a Google certification, it's, you know, Google Docs, how do you use this and what are some cool things that you can do with Google Docs? Or, you know, Seesaw, same thing, Adobe, all of those, they're very product specific. But if you're getting an advanced degree program, that's going to be much more broad educational applications to these things. How does collaboration in a classroom impact the way that instruction is delivered? And then what are some different ways that we can encourage collaboration and design lessons around those kinds of things? So you focus much more on methodology and theoretical learning with an advanced degree as opposed to, you know, some specific product, which, you know, is a very valuable experience. To go through something like that, you know, and then you have some obvious, you know, drawbacks to going through an advanced degree program too.
Yeah, we talked in the pre-planning stage about how it demonstrates that you are still engaged in your craft and the craft of teaching, and that you are looking at these new tools, not just relying on your historic experience and knowledge and things like that. Times are changing, and kids have changed because of instructional technology tools. And so just a commitment, I guess, is what you're making when you're pursuing that kind of degree program.
Yeah, it's not something you want to take lightly, both financially, but also a time commitment and just mind share as well, because it these things are pretty deep, and you need to spend the time to get that out of it. And it's, again, not about the degree; it's about what you can bring back into the system and implement in your own situation. Speaking of your own situation, I know a lot of our listeners are working in, well, schools. Let's kind of bring it down to that level. One of the key concerns with our well schools is, of course, budget. And so when we're talking about professional growth, professional education, getting degrees, certifications, not all of them are free. In fact, a number of them are, going to conferences, for instance, taking tests, those kinds of things do tend to take some money. What kind of budgeting advice would be beneficial for well schools to consider as they craft their school budgets for this kind of thing? Kind of models are there? And
sure. This is always something that, we've got to be really sensitive of when it comes to attaining an advanced degree or things like that. My thoughts on it are, this is a really important thing, and congregations should prioritize this kind of a thing. Whether it's an annual allotment per teacher or per staff member or something like that, to, and not just teachers, but, pastors and staff ministers too, they need to have access to those kinds of things as well. To set aside, maybe $500 a year or something like that, it's just an arbitrary number. But that's pretty attainable for a lot of places to be able to set that aside as an encouragement for their teachers and their staff members to, continue and pursue some additional education. And then I would also say that, if a school is requiring somebody to get a master's, that then shouldn't be something that the teacher has to completely take up on their own. Or, in Nebraska, we have state licensure requirements. And if somebody comes to Nebraska from out of state and they're licensed, we don't have reciprocity with whatever that state is that they came from, then there may be some deficits that need to be made up. And, and if that's a condition too, then I think the congregation needs to foot the bill for those required professional development and the required classes as well.
I think there's a plus side to that, in that the congregation and the school board, whomever's behind this designation of funds, is saying not only do we, want those kind of credentials on our staff or whatever, but we want to invest in you. We want you to be fed and up to date with your skills and things like that. We care about you developing personally, rather than just waiting for them to, oh, I think I'd like to go to this conference. You're proactively encouraging that kind of thing in your staff.
Yeah, and that, I think, needs to be part and parcel of a larger professional development plan. It's not just, well, this conference sounds interesting and it's kind of in my field, but, where does it fit in the overall picture and how does this get me from A to B? Or, I always go to this conference, therefore I'm going to go to it again this year. So I think there's, some strategic thinking that should go on in collaboration with administration and those people that are, advising you on career path. And not that there's always a quote unquote traditional career path in our well schools, but there certainly are areas that each school could use greater expertise. And I think thinking holistically about how that team all fits in and where the professional development plans kind of track to is really an important conversation that sometimes gets left out, you know, when push comes to shove.
So, yeah. And you mentioned, you know, Jason, not just teachers, but pastors and staff ministers. Right. We have some great resources across the board for all those different audiences. We can point to the Grow in Grace website, where a lot of focus has been made for professional development for pastors, especially, and then the MLC graduate program, one of the most affordable graduate programs in the country, I've heard, is churning out great graduates there as well. So we definitely have some good resources to point to right here in the Wells.
Excellent.
And I hear that MLC has excellent adjunct instructors too.
So they say.
Huh? That's what I hear. I don't know.
Okay. Are you teaching again this this coming term, Jason?
I wasn't going to this summer, but I decided to do it again. So yeah, I have a Google class that I'm teaching again this summer.
Yeah, excellent. I had that same conversation. I wasn't going to, and yeah, lo and behold, yeah, we're off.
Yeah, John's very convincing when he needs to be.
Yes, yeah. All right, let's move along then. We do have a little bit of news in tech.
We do, and I will do a quick screen share for those watching the video. We were made aware of the fact that one of our Wells teachers, Michael Babler, who is at Divine Savior Lutheran Academy down in Doral, Florida, is actually in the running to be a next generation leader in school technology. A voting process is going on right now, and we'll include a link in our show notes to where you can go over and vote for Michael as a next generation ed tech leader. And there's a little description of the work he's doing there at Divine Savior Lutheran Academy. So congrats, Michael, on even being considered for that kind of honor, and best of luck in the voting process. One more thing of note in news and tech, just a recent study was released that says global educational technology investment has soared to a record $9.5 billion. That's a lot of money being spent on educational technology, not all in formal ways and school-related resources and things that are being developed. Much of it, they say, is on the home side, where parents are more willing to invest in educational technology tools for their children. Also, they referenced a lot of augmented reality, virtual reality development is adding to those dollars as well. But just interesting to see the numbers grow. There's a chart on this website that shows that just in 2008, they were right at the $1 billion threshold, and now it's $9.5 billion. So that's pretty exponential growth over the last 10 years or so. Pretty impressive.
I guess that does not surprise me in the least, or shouldn't surprise us in the least. And looking at it purely from a market perspective, vendors are recognizing that this is a huge market, and Google was right place, right time. Therefore, you know, when you talk to educators and you look at classrooms, there's Chromebooks almost everywhere you look. And I think there are others looking at that success and saying, well, you know, we'd love a piece of that puzzle. And I'm sure, Jason, you get phone calls all the time from prospective partners that want to give you the next best thing.
We should probably move on then to Wells Now and things that are happening in Wells, including things we've mentioned recently, the Interactive Faith Bible Study Series that is available at wells.net/interactivefaith. The study is on the book of Isaiah, I believe, and God confronts and comforts his people, led by Pastor Daniel Hobbin, who's from St. John's in Antigua. So tune in on Wednesday nights, 6 and 8 p.m. Central through February 7th to be part of that online Bible study experience.
Yep, 2 weeks left. I tuned in to last week's session. Dan does a really nice job. So He has an interesting casual style, and I think he's put together a great presentation. So you'll learn a lot. I did.
Excellent. One more mention. We have a conference coming up next summer. Not too early to mark it on your calendar. It's the Wells Educational Technology and Leadership Summit happening June 25th through 27th at Wisconsin Dells Kalahari Resort there. So great place to bring the family along, enjoy a multi-day conference. We were talking about conferences earlier. This is a conference you'll want to be a part of, and you can head over to wellsedtechlead.com and sign up for information. And we're going to have some emails coming out to people that are interested. There'll be a lot of things starting to happen around the conference as we begin to craft our presenters and the different tracks that we're going to be offering and things like that. So be sure to save the date and sign up for updates at wellsedtechlead.com.
Very good. Let's move on to our tips or picks of the week. And we always let our guest hosts go first. Jason, you have a pick this week?
Yeah. So my pick, let me see if I can set up a screen share here. My pick is going to be Loom. So there are a lot of people that like to use screencasting in their classroom, and there are a lot of options out there for these kinds of products. So, you know, we have your Screencast-O-Matic and those kinds of tools. Loom is an extension for Chrome that you can install. And it's completely free, but what's really nice about this one is you have your webcam view that goes along with it, and it kind of takes a little bit of a different format. So rather than, you know, the box in the corner, you have a circle that you can move around to different parts of the screen. And then they also don't have some of the other limitations that a lot of the other products might have. But another thing that I really like with it is you can post your recordings to YouTube or wherever. You can download them, or you can host them on Loom and then have conversations and discussions there. So, you know, I see something like this being really useful for if you need to do demonstrations for people or things like that. I'll use the tool for that. And then the other way that I could see it used is, you know, if you have students doing something like this, they can post their recordings there, and then you can have a discussion back and forth or comments and things like that too on that. So I really like Loom for screencasting as an additional option, something maybe for people to explore.
So does it capture just the browser window, or can you do other things on the desktop as well?
No, it can capture just a browser window. It can go in a section of your desktop, or you can do your whole desktop.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, that's very similar to Screencast-O-Matic, which mm-hmm. I use.
Yep.
Okay. Cool.
All right. I think it might be my turn for a tip or pick of the week, and I'm going to share the website Fiverr, F-I-V-E-R-R. I think we've talked about this in the past on Wells Tech, but maybe it's been a while, and I just had a recent experience having a logo developed on Fiverr, and it was actually a pretty fun experience to work with the developer, kind of go back and forth and get a logo developed. So if you head over there, you can explore all the different areas. The concept behind the site is that you can pay as little as $5 for work that's being done by a freelancer who's registered on the site. And I think they started around the concept of graphic design, but they have all kinds of things available now. Music and audio programming, video work, writing and translation, all kinds of things. I dug into the graphics and design area and then specified that I was interested in logo design, but they have lots of different types of graphics you can request as well. And then when you go into the logo design area, there's literally thousands of designers who are part of the site, so you can kind of narrow your search by different types of logos you might be looking for, the price range you're interested in, how quickly you need it done, and things like that. And you see price range from $5. I see one that's $560 is their starting price. So there's all kinds of things all over the board here. I was looking on the cheap end, so I went to, looking for someone that would do it for $5. I was actually looking for a logo to represent our new RV lifestyle that we're going to be starting on this summer. And I selected a designer and purchased the $5 logo. It turns out that they add a dollar onto that. So it's not possible to spend just $5 on Fiverr because they have an extra fee that they add on. So yes, the designer is charging $5, but then there's one more dollar. So at a minimum, you're going to spend $6 on the site. I added on a few extra things, sent the designer just a quick picture of my RV, and 24 hours later I had a logo design, and it was pretty realistic from the picture that I had sent in. I was pretty impressed, and he asked for feedback. I wasn't thrilled with the font, and I also realized once I saw it that it was a nice square design, but I probably wanted something rectangular as well. So I went back and added on some more options. I had requested a PSD file so I could have the layered file for Photoshop work, and then added on the fact that I wanted a second logo in a rectangular format. And so ultimately I ended up with the rectangle logo, the PSD file, everything. My total money spent was $22. It would have been $20, but because I did it in two different times, they added on that dollar fee twice. So my Fiverr experience, got a decent logo. I'm pretty happy with it. It's pretty accurate to the look of our RV. And I spent $22 in the process. So just thought that was worth sharing, kind of a firsthand experience of Fiverr.
So I'm curious, what's the application for, where are we going to see this logo?
Where are we going to see this logo? Well, that's another pick. Yeah. We're just kind of playing with how we want to document our trip and everything, obviously using some online tools. So we'll probably be blogging the experience and using Instagram and things like that. So wanted a logo to go along with that. And for a very affordable price, I have something I'm pretty happy with. And I can take it all apart and use different parts of it as well. So
very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have talked about Fiverr before, and but I had never really talked to anybody who went through the process. So yours was a positive one, sounds like.
Definitely.
Good.
Yeah, pleased with the outcome. The guy was in India, for what it's worth. Did a great job.
Speaking of design, that is where my pick is headed as well. I have been working on an update to the Wells mobile app, and mobile apps and websites in general do have some design requirements, and one of those is icons for different areas of the site or menu items, those kinds of things. And one site that I find extremely valuable, and I've used this in the past for previous versions, is a site called Fontello, Fontello.com. Not much to look at, the site itself, but it's very utilitarian. It basically aggregates a bunch of different font sets. And when I say fonts, we're speaking specifically here of icon sets. So it's not letters, but images. Many ways, these are really helpful when you're building a site, because then you're not having to use individual graphics that you have to have different sizes for. The way Fontello works is you basically create font sets or sets of fonts of exactly what you want. So you keep the file size down, but then you get a typeface that is really just made up of icons. And then you reference those icons, and you treat them just like you would a font. So if you want to set a icon to be bigger, so rather than the 12-point size that your line is, you want to go to 24, you just simply up the font size. And it really, you treat it just like a font. You can color them. They scale infinitely, so they're resolution independent. And Fontello just does a nice job of making these all available. It's kind of like a shopping cart approach where you select the ones that you want and they package them up. You can give them special names. You can customize the names of them. If you're watching along at home, these are the ones that I'm currently using for the for the Wells mobile app, and I keep adding to these. And you can even see that we've added the Wells logo. So it's really handy to have your logo in a font set where you can plop that in wherever you like, resize it, and it becomes just an easy way to incorporate these into your website or whatever, even a blog or those kinds of things. And then once you've got them all customized, you simply download the package, which is made up of font files, and it's also made up of the CSS necessary to add them to your web page. So it's really kind of a sweet setup. They work mostly with what are called SVGs or SVG formats, and I'll include a link to more information about SVGs as well in the show notes. SVG stands for Scalable Vector Graphics, and that's what makes these fonts infinitely scalable. They're not based on pixels, they're based on math, and the math actually draws the icon. It can be complicated math, but because it's just math, it can scale, and you can size it any way you want. And actually, SVGs, there's all kinds of conversion tools. So if you have an EPS format of your font or of your icon, you can convert it over to SVG. You can even convert JPEGs and GIFs over, and they'll give you an approximate representation of it. But our good friends at W3 Schools have a whole series on SVG where you can create your own. And because it is just math, you can do lots of things like adding borders and blur effects and drop shadows and gradients, those kinds of things. And you can really do a lot with this. But the reason I bring it up in this context is that you can actually add your own fonts, your own custom icons into Fontello, and then you've always got them along with. So you can kind of see the ones that we've created over the years. You have an MPH icon and, you know, the Synod icon. Our Heart to Heart blog series has its own icon. So you could have your own font set that is created for your own applications or websites, and Fontello is an easy way to do that. Free, so there's no cost, really easy to use, and you can just have a lot of fun with it too. A lot of classroom applications as well. So I talk a little bit about this when I teach my Area Lutheran High School online class on web page design, where we do a little bit of Fontello work and can grab the icons that we want for our work. So kind of a cool site and free to use, free to try, free to use.
Excellent. I was going to ask about the price tag, but you answered that question. I'm also going to ask you why there isn't a WellsTech logo in the custom logo set.
That needs to get in there, doesn't it?
I think it does. I was straining my eyes, but I didn't find one. So.
It's not, but that's a very good point. So look for it coming soon to the Wells mobile app through Fontello.
Good deal.
All right, let's move along to our ministry resource segment of the show.
And in keeping with our education theme this week, we want to feature the Math Counts website. Kind of popular in our family right now because it's Math Counts season. The regional Math Counts meet will be this Friday here in South Central Minnesota. Our team from St. Paul's Lutheran School is headed over to Mankato State University to take their Math Counts exams. So Math Counts is a corporate-sponsored math competition geared toward middle school age students, primarily 7th and 8th grade. And they take a series of exams. There's different flavors to them. Some of them are individual tests. Some of them are team tests. And the highest scores advance up the ranks to state level competition and finally to national competition each year. It's a really amazing program. And our family's been a part of it for probably 6 or 8 years. And right now my husband is a coach on the St. Paul's team. So just really exciting to see the kids develop a love for math through this program. There are a few fees as you register your school to be part of it, but you can look for some corporate sponsors even for that. Our local 3M Corporation is part of Math Counts nationally. And so they're willing to pay the fees for our teams to be a part of the testing program and everything. There's also a fun side to it where they have a mathematics club and you can earn like trophies for your club. And they also have a video challenge every year. So if your kids are looking for a creative outlet with their math skills, they can compete in a video challenge, and those even make their way up to national level recognition as well. Wanted to specifically link to their problem of the week. So even if you don't want to be part of the competition or the club or the video challenge, you can go here and get free math problems each week. And so, for instance, this week's problems have a theme of let the competitions begin, because like I said, the chapter competitions are beginning right now. And so they have some problems around that. For instance, if the sum of the positive integer,
if a camel can carry a maximum weight of.
Yeah. I love those. So fun stuff. So you can get the problem of the week. But if you go back a week later and look at the problem of the week, either on the web or in PDF downloadable format, the answers are then included 1 week later. So you can make this just a fun activity in your classroom by giving the students the problems of the week. You get to noodle on them with the students and hopefully figure out answers and then come back a week later and download the answers and see if you got it right. So just one of the many features on the website. Also wanted to point out that they have a dedicated YouTube channel, and there's some amazing resources out on their Math Counts Foundation YouTube channel. We'll include one example in the show notes, but they have playlists from something they call Math Counts Minis, where this really fun guy explains different math concepts on a monthly basis. They put out a new one of these during the school year. So there's 81 of these Math Count Minis that your students can just learn from. You can just kind of explore the concepts. They often have worksheets linked to these where you can download some additional work on the concepts they're explaining. And they also have all their videos from the Math Video Challenge that I mentioned before. So you can go out and watch those, just some fun videos created by students for students on different math concepts. So lots to find on Math Counts website. So check it out.
Neat. I too have problems every week, a problem of the week. If only I could count on the solution being ready a week later. It's not always that easy. So. All right, Math Counts. Awesome. You're going to miss Mathletes, aren't you? You know that you have all your kids, all your boys out of the game.
Yeah, definitely going to miss it. It's fun, though, because Facebook reminds me, and I've been going down memory lane with pictures of past years when they were part of the competition and things. But, yeah, this will be the last year that Kevin also is a coach, and so we'll definitely miss Math Counts as part of our annual fun.
Yeah. All right, Sally. Community feedback.
And this community feedback came to us courtesy of the Wells Intersections Facebook group. So if you're not part of that group, check it out on Facebook. We'll have a link in the show notes. It's a place where people share ideas in technology and ministry, kind of an offshoot of Wells Tech that Pastor James Aderman curates on Facebook. And recently, our friend Philip Wells pointed us to Peace Devotions. I think we've mentioned this perhaps once more on Wells Tech when they got started, but they've been doing devotions in the Mankato area at an ELS congregation, Peace Lutheran Church, on a weekday basis, I believe, for about 4 months. And they are seeing some really exciting results from that. They have over 2,000 people who are tuning into their daily devotions. So they've definitely made an investment. It's not something that happens, you know, without some time commitment and things like that behind it. But they're really excited by the results that they're seeing. They have a webpage, peacedevotions.com, where you can also watch the videos and see transcriptions of all the videos and that kind of thing. They publish them on Twitter. They have a YouTube channel. So definitely excited that the effort is growing. And thanks, Philip, for sharing that and allowing us to share it with our Wells Tech audience again. So be sure to follow. It's at facebook.com/peacedevotions.
Yeah, great URL for one. Nice site design, very clean. I think it's a WordPress theme. So they do They do a nice job with that. Very easy to find and grab this stuff. So, and Philip's a very talented guy when it comes to video. Certainly, we've talked to him on the show before, and I haven't had a chance to watch any of these, but I'm excited to look at these as maybe an example we could share with other congregations and say this is certainly doable and a valuable ministry.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Good job. If you'd like to contribute yourself to the show, that's easy to do, and we wish you would. Go to wellstech.wells.net, and you can find all of our show notes. Everything that we talk about here is usually found there. There's a link there. But also ways to contribute to the show are found there as well. You can add a comment to any of the shows that are posted there. You can click on any of the links at the top. That'll take you to our social network. Our network of social networks, about that, Pinterest, Digo, Twitter, Facebook, Google, all the major players are there, and we're there. Hashtag WellsTech is usually the way to get our attention. You can also send us a good old-fashioned email, wellstech@wells.net, and we love those as well. And even a little voicemail button there for you just to so we can hear your voice. So we would take any kind of comments about previous shows, suggestions, your own experiences with technology and ministry, just really anything. We'd love for you to join the conversation. So take advantage of that opportunity. Let's close the show with a video of the week.
And you need to bring your popcorn, folks, because it's not just one video, but two. We have a double feature today because we wanted to feature one of the MathCount mini videos that I was just talking about as our ministry resource. So in this case, you're going to learn all about sequences and use cases, all kinds of stuff. And we also want to feature the January Wells Connection video, which is the year in review for Wells. So exciting to see ministry across all the different areas of Wells, kind of a follow-up to our annual report link and videos that we shared last week. So check out both of those videos over at wellstech.wells.net.
And Sally, you want to give the folks at home a little tease for next month's theme?
Oh, we do have something planned for February. We are looking at continuing the skill sharpening, but shifting the focus a little to how you can train volunteers in your church and school. And we have lots of different volunteer activities that involve technology, and so we want to give you ideas for doing that. And our first up, first on the list is worship projection. So those that are using projection in worship know that that means there has to be a dedicated person running that projection. And I know that's something that they're regularly advertising in my congregation. You know, we're looking for more people to operate projection during worship. And so we want to share some ideas around how you can train those volunteers, things you can provide for them to ensure that that very important role is carried out to its best. And in addition, Martin, we are fortunate to have someone who is an expert in worship projection software. That would be Kristen Tate from Faith Life. Listeners may recognize the company Faith Life as being the people behind the Logos software, but they also have a software called Proclaim that many congregations are making use of for collaborating in advance of worship and then using for worship projection. And Kristen gives us a walkthrough on how all of that works with the Proclaim software.
So tune in next month for all about volunteers, and we're going to kick it off with one of those. I think every congregation struggles a little bit with that. I know we do as well, trying to keep the rosters full, especially at multiple services. You know, like we do, we have four services every weekend, and need a separate person for each one of those, and et cetera, et cetera. So tune in next week for that. Jason, I want to thank you again for taking some time out of your schedule to join us. Great insight, and glad you made it back, head full of knowledge and relatively healthy.
Always happy to be a part of the conversation, Martin. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Thanks to all of you. Please tune in next week as we continue our monthly focus, and tell your friends that they can join the conversation as well. Take care, and bye-bye. Thank you.